Flash Radio is a podcast from and about the GA 2007 in Heiligendamm, Germany. We will broadcast a daily half-hour news summary from the 2nd of June through to the 10th. For more information, go to www.flashradio.wordpress.com.
Welcome to the Flash Radio podcast number 8, on Friday, June the 8th. Today was a day of climate change actions, an alternative summit to the official G8, and a demonstration in solidarity with Rossport Camp and against Shell and the destruction which is threatening in Ireland. There was a final demonstration against the G8, a naked action, and a clown press conference. You'll hear all about it on today's podcast, which we hope you enjoy and find useful. Rossport Solidarity Camp was established in June 2005. It came out of a solidarity gathering held in Rossport on the first weekend of that month, at the request of residents of Rossport in northwest Mayo, Ireland. The purpose of the camp is to oppose the construction of a high-pressure raw gas pipeline and inland gas refinery in their area, and to protect the land from Shell by picketing their compound in Rossport, and to offer practical help to the families of the Rossport Five, the name given to five members of the Rossport community imprisoned for 94 days in June 2005 for preventing Shell engineers from laying the pipeline near their homes. After their jailing, it was feared that Shell may attempt to lay the pipeline to the Corrib gas field in their absence. Campers and residents began to set up a camp. The camp was assembled in a short space of time in a fairly spontaneous and improvised manner. Cooking equipment and experience came from the Bitchin Kitchen Collective. A marquee was donated by Dissent, one of the groups organising the G8 protests in Scotland. Some tents were borrowed, and people came from environmentalist groups. The camp was sited on a small farm owned by one of the jailed Rossport Five, right on the proposed pipeline route. A further camp was set up on the other side of the estuary from Rossport in Glengad, where the landfall for the offshore pipeline is planned. From the end of June 2005, the main activity of the camp was picketing the construction compound in Rossport, in conjunction with Rossport residents. The picket ran from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day, with two people on three-hour shifts keeping watch. In early July, Shell, unable to continue work due to the constant pickets, announced a suspension of work on the pretext of calling for a period of calm. At the end of August, Rossport Solidarity Camp organised a solidarity week, culminating in the 10th grassroots gathering. Over 100 people attended the gathering that weekend, with Rossport Camp briefly blossoming into three camps on the pipeline route. The camp disbanded at the end of the construction season in October 2005, both because Shell had ceased work and because conditions on the campsite became too wet as autumn advanced. People in the camp did not want to leave the area, so they rented a house not far from Rossport, from where the next camp was prepared. Camp participants spoke at meetings, social centres and other protest camps around Ireland, Scotland, England and beyond to raise awareness. On 17th and 18th of February 2006, solidarity actions were held across Ireland and the UK, as well as in Holland and Sweden, aimed at highlighting the reopening of the camp and marking the beginning of a new season of resistance against Shell and the state. Rossport Solidarity Camp reopened on the 25th of February 2006. Whereas in 2005 the camp was located on the route of the pipeline in Rossport, people decided that this year's camp would be located at the landfall of the pipeline on the beach at Glengad. On the June bank holiday weekend in 2006, Rossport Solidarity Camp celebrated 1 year's involvement in the Shell to Sea campaign. A gathering was held at the camp with talks, workshops, a tour of the area, movies, music and planning. The weekend included a privatisation forum, focusing on the privatisation of natural resources, examining issues of ownership and control of Irish national resources. After having been unable to work at any time on their site since June 2005 due to community pickets, Shell announced their intention to recommence work in September 2006. Shell attempted to bring diggers onto the site on several occasions, but were stopped by residents who stood in front of the site gates, blocking access to the site. On Tuesday 26th of September, over 100 campaigners blocked a convoy of Shell vehicles accessing the site, again by standing in front of the gates. Shell were accompanied by the Gardaí, Irish police. But when it became apparent that the protesters would not move, Shell vehicles turned away. Early in the morning of 3rd of October 2006, almost 200 police were drafted into the area. They erected roadblocks and crowd control barriers around Shell's worksite. Residents engaged in a sit-down blockade in front of the site gates. They were dragged away by Gardaí and Shell vehicles entering the site. Since then, various national days of action have been called and supporters travelled to Erris with the aim of stopping Shell from gaining access to the site. Gardaí responded to the blockades with brutality, as a result of which several campaigners were hospitalised. However, since the community resistance to Shell and the Irish state began, Shell has been stopped from doing any work at the proposed refinery site or from laying the upstream pipeline.
I think that's not crazy. I think they do it some.
Why is it good?
They do it about the world, I think.
Shell to help. Want to say something for Flash Radio? Why you are here?
Yeah, we're just here today in solidarity with the people of Rossport, County Mayo in Ireland, and also people in Nigeria and in Sakhalin who are all facing the same sort of oppression from Shell. People are just being forced off their land without any choice, regardless of their wishes or regardless of the fact that the land is theirs, that they've worked the land, often in underdeveloped parts of these countries anyway. So we're just here to come out and say that, you know, it's not on, that, you know, people know about it and things have to change. And it's also because today is a day of action against climate change here at the G8. You know, number one, people just have to find alternatives. If we continue oil exploration and consumption at the rate we're currently using it, well, then none of us have a chance to continue for future years. So we're just here to say that enough is enough.
And now, an interview with a recently released driver of the Dutch media bus. Bus and equipment were confiscated by police last Wednesday in an attempt to prevent the ongoing non-commercial media work. The police claim it was for a different reason. Listen on.
We were in Badogran, near the G8 information point, and a very innocent, we said, hey, some police, must be somewhere, some trouble. And then the next moment we had about 20 or 30 of these green guys in our bus, and we were pushed out, etc., etc.
What if they say they were searching for weapons?
No, nothing, of course. At such a moment they don't say anything. You have only to obey and move. And I try to talk with someone without a helmet, because mostly they are a little bit higher in rank. And, but there was no discussion possible, and we had to move. And because all the policemen were so very agitated, they had very big eyes and all very stressed. And but later on, when we heard they were thinking that we were the information point for the Black Bloc or something, that we gave information to people, and they thought they were coming into some Black Bloc, whatever. And so that's probably why they were so stressed.
So how did you find this out?
Well, the lawyers, they told it to the lawyers at the end. First, they said they were looking for a pirate transmitting location. But, well, if you're looking for a radio station, then there's a very simple sort of technology to find where the transmitter is. So it's not such a likely story. So
yeah, that's true.
And especially because how they behaved, it's probably indeed they were thinking to take over the Black Bloc center, which, probably that stupid.
Can you tell us about the media bus and what it is?
Well, the media bus facilitates journalists, filmmakers, photographers to be able to work and to be able to upload and download images to all kinds of places where they have contact, and in that way we can have the rest of the world see the other side of the press, because most press only see the riots and they don't see that, for instance, the big demo in Saturday is probably started by some policemen provoking a fight with some.
Did you have some?
There
media?
Are some footage from. There's a film about some policemen provoking a fight, and then when the fight is there, they gonna shout, "Well, too many people. We have need assistance." And this film now is being by the normal media also taken over. So that's very nice.
Fantastic.
That's quite a nice result.
That's a real result.
Yeah, and furthermore, we have some equipment for sound equipment, and we can project films, and it's all powered by solar panels. So.
And can you tell us then about the more of the incident? What happened after the?
Well, we drove the bus to the station of the police, and then the normal routine. You're going in the first cage, and then doing something else, and then you go to the next cage, and after a while they forget you, then you have to shout, and then you are allowed to pee, etc. But in total time we have been there, they never told us what we were arrested for. We asked for a lawyer, we never saw a lawyer, but at the end we were released, and they said that the judge had said that we shouldn't be kept longer because there was no violation. Then they said that the judge also said that the police was just in trying to arrest us. But at the end, the same judge has freed this afternoon the bus, and gave the order to the police that they didn't get any more time to try and hold the bus, because they said to me that they want to look to some technical things of the bus, because the traffic police would have problems with it. But they never checked it, and they were only still checking the bus or about information they could get out of the bus. And it was funny to see that at the moment we came to pick up the bus with our lawyer, that there were still some policemen in the bus with a laptop and searching. Probably it was because at first they thought, well, it's not such a dangerous group, there's no problem. But after that, there was a lot of media fuss by the journalists. Trade Union of Holland has been calling. The Groene Partij from Deutschland has been calling. The embassy from Berlin has been calling.
Sorry, this all is kinds because of, the media bus has press passes.
Because it's a press bus. And it's, of course, very strange for whichever government or whatever to arrest a media bus. So that's, it's quite a precedent all over. And so it's not so strange. There's a lot of fuss about it.
And has there been any comment on that from the police or the?
No, not as far as we know.
Yeah, on this. Okay, and what were the conditions in the police cell?
Well, the Industriestrasse is a business center of Siemens, and that is rented to them. And they have set some tents in the backyard, and there are iron cages of, like that sort of wired fences, and with a net over it, and then about 20 people in it, and then you get from the very thin mat to lay on. And well, the circumstances are not very nice, but not horrible.
Okay, and. Why do you think they suspected the media? Plus, why do you think they got this information about the black plot?
Well, mostly this sort of thing comes because they have a lot of silent policemen. When we were to pick up the bus there, they left the team, four guys on bikes, looking just like us, with a bag and going by bike to their job. And probably one of those saw that a few black block people or people looking like black bloc were by the bus asking where is the Lidl, but they didn't hear that. But they
well,
saw.
A little.
Yeah. For instance,
yeah.
Something a question like that, and they don't hear it, but they see four or five black block guys standing by the bus and asking and we answering, and then they go, "Okay, where are we going?" Probably somebody has seen that, and probably
that's why you spend the night in jail.
Yeah. Probably.
Another day of blockades has just finished. People are leaving the gates alone now, tired but satisfied. Police responded to the joyful character of the protesters with batons and cannons. But let's hear all this firsthand from the field.
Today the people abandoned the gates around the fence of Heiligen Dam after 2 days of successful blockades. Notwithstanding the tiredness of 2 days passed on the asphalt of the roads, the people were cheerful and satisfied and a bit sad to eat back after the unforgettable experience they've earned in this week of protest against the G8. The non-violent strategy and the joyful spirit which has characterized the actions of the last 2 days has mirrored the repression and the violence which has been used by the police forces, which have tried to disperse the demonstrators with water cannons, pepper sprays and batons, wounding many people which have taken part to the blockade. The activists which have taken part to these actions, and in particular to the one of four Bollenhagen and Bergerende, the eastern and north gate of the fence protecting the Heiligen Dam, and moved towards Rostock today for a final parade to celebrate the success of the blockades. Here are some of the impressions of the people which have taken part to the last event of the protest against the G8 2007.
I think it was fine and it was
no violence at all from sort of
protesting against the policy of the TAs and fighting for a better world, but yeah, it's not a place to be now.
That is bad before we see something like that again, no?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll have to wait for a...
Yeah.
And is there now a march to go, like, demonstrate in Rostock or the province?
I think we are going to go to Rostock now by train, and then we go to the harbor where there is the final speech.
Okay.
And then we, we'll have a party.
Today was the closing day for this year's G8 summit, and in Kulungsborn, the small seaside town near Heiligendamm, which hosted this year's G8 summit press center, several spontaneous actions took place. A swimming action with protesters crowding the beach, which was a forbidden zone, a clown army press conference, and finally, protesters invading the stage of a national state television team, causing yet one more embarrassment for the German police.
It's Friday, 8th of June. I'm at the beach of Kulungsborn, which is the place where all the journalists stay, near Heiligendamm, just down the road. Just come from an action by a group of activists who were trying to swim to the forbidden zone. In fact, they did swim into it. They split up. There was one group running along the beach, holding a banner, and another group swam to the forbidden zone and unfolded a banner quite close to it. There was private security staff rounding them up. And while they were talking to the assembled press, about 30 police with batons and guns came jogging along the beach. They're not wearing riot gear, but when they came, the protesters ran back into the sea. But on the beach, hidden, were a lot of undercover policemen in their trunks. And they stormed into the sea, snatched the banner, and arrested about 10 of the swimmers. Another 15 scattered along the beach, trying to camouflage themselves. Most of them are naked or half naked, so they would need a pair of trunks to camouflage themselves. Now they've been rounded up. There's a little fence here dividing the private bit of the beach and the public bit. And on that fence, they're sort of set up like a mini pen where they push the arrested people in. Their arms are being twisted. They're being held in front of the cameras of the press. About 15 arrested now. They're surrounded by police. Now they're being guided away. There's a pregnant woman amongst them. They're being taken away up the beach. Asked them to go faster. They were giving towels or trunks, and nakedness seems to have been too much. Oh, and now they're marching past a whole load of Robinson Club guests who are receiving a massage. Ooh, the club rep is not liking this at all. Right, where are they taking them? It's a beach promenade, they're reading them their rights. The main purpose of this seems to be to show them to the press. They sort of take little breaks so that they can be filmed. Now they're being searched for documents and the details taken. I've been told why they've been arrested. The first person arrested has just been told that he's gone to court for breach of property, entering private property, entering a forbidden zone, also resistance to the police, resisting arrest, and insult of a police officer. In Germany, you're obliged to always carry your ID on you. Surprisingly enough, all those protesters had ID hidden somewhere on their body, even the naked ones, it seems. Atmosphere's good. The process was a success. They're 8 arrested, 9 arrested, about 10 or 20 still in the water. About 100 on the fence, dividing the private bit and the public. And now to Kermit, reporting from the fence.
There was a very spontaneous kind of action here, and I'm just going to ask someone what happened.
We was here from Doping Knowledge with the photo team, and we saw the little manifestation here. It was very spontaneous, and then I think I got a bush mask, and I put it on, and then I...
You were in front of the police line, and it looked great.
Yeah, thank you.
It was very spontaneous and peaceful. Just, I mean, we are at the beach, we want to go into the water, and why not cross, swim anywhere in the ocean? And it's so ridiculous that the police people are paying taxes, the journalists are paying taxes, and they don't need the security. They're not scared of us. I asked them, and they said, no, we're not scared. And so much money is spent to secure journalists who are independent. We're not doing anything against journalists, and which is, you know, we're all in the same boat.
It looks quite ridiculous because it looks so pleasant. Everyone's in their sun beach wear, and there's a whole kind of line of police. Do you think they got a bit kind of confused because there were a lot of clowns and
Well, clowns, I don't know if you have you ever seen Hamlet in Shakespeare. It's the jolly joker, and they always try to get everything over with humor, yes? Very serious themes. And that's what we're trying to transport. It is very serious, but we all have to think positive and try to get positivity across to have some view into the future for a lot of people which are dying at the moment.
Yes, the clown army arrives.
We, the clandestine insurgent rebel clown army, had intended to give a press conference here at 4 o'clock. As you can see, there are very few of us here today. This is because the Bundespolizei, the German police, are preventing our friends from joining us here today. So, they must be very, very scared. Or they really like us, which is nice because it means they want to keep us and not let us go. Sadly, we do have an announcement to make, a big, important, spectacular announcement. Unfortunately, thanks to our friends in the German police.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
We are unable to give this announcement because as a non-hierarchical, horizontally organized organization, we are unable to speak as a small group for the whole army. So, we are going to mount a rescue mission to our friends. And if you wish to join us, we will make the press conference there. If you wish to follow us to see how the supposedly free and democratic German state treats us, you are quite free to do so.
So,
come on,
Clan
Army!
Come on!
Clan Army!
Come on!
Head march!
So this is the Clown Army's press conference.
For the last 3 days, ourselves and all of these lovely people from Dissent and all the other networks of the world have been surrounding the Heiligen Damm Hotel complex because we believed that the orcs of the Bundespolizei and their leaders Sauron and Saruman were holding eight of our friends. After early on the morning of the 6th, we announced to the police, the orcs, that we had them completely and utterly surrounded. After 3 days, when we have made repeated attempts to negotiate with the police, we have had nothing in return, and we have decided today, out of the goodness of our hearts, in spite of having them completely and utterly surrounded, to let them go. Thank you for your cooperation. Have a very, very nice day.
Beach at Kulungsborn, and we're near a center stage where there was some live transmission that happened about half an hour ago. Can you describe what you saw?
Well, a lot of activists were here after an action that took place earlier today, where people were trying to swim into the forbidden zone. Some of them got arrested, and there was a lot of other activists to support them here and so on, and they were still around hanging out on the beach. And the Clown Army was here trying to set up a press conference. And then suddenly, one of the protesters realized that one of the national broadcasting channels started broadcasting from here, live from Kulungsborn. They've got their own little stage here. So they all stormed up here, about 150 of them, behind the stage, the TV channel were using the ocean, the Baltic Sea, as a backdrop. So they all stormed up behind it, shouting, "We are all 129A, which is the law that was used, or a special law that was set up and used against protesters to keep them out of certain areas. And and then the National State Television had to sort of draw curtains in front and on the side of their stage so they could continue their report. And they continued by interviewing a representative by Block G8, and she was kind of telling how the blockades went, and how successful it had been, and how embarrassing it was, and how, well, what the kind of results of the last few days of actions were. And then they also interviewed a person from the police who didn't really have to say much. And then somehow the situation got a little bit more aggravated. I'm not quite sure why. The police did sort of have a hand in protecting the stage, and they set up a row of riot police in front of the stage to stop protesters from getting any closer. And then the protesters were chanting, "We're not, not all of us are here, our prisoners are missing." And that made it quite, that sort of didn't help the situation. Well, it sort of got more and more aggravated. And it was sort of going on a bit for cat and mouse play, chanting, pushing, da 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 da. And people went down to the beach again. The clan army was doing another action there. And then somehow there were, I'm not quite sure what happened, but it looked like there was a snatch squad trying to arrest somebody. And the mass of protesters just pushed them up the stairs, just surrounded them. And they were so scared. They were seriously scared. They were
the police?
The police, yeah. The police were sort of, well, five of them. They're going back on back, trying to get back to behind this bit of fence where there was lots of riot police waiting. They were, you know, the protesters were sort of not confrontational, but not violent. You know, they were all having the putting their hands up, showing that they were not violent, and they were kind of shouting, "We are peaceful. What are you?" What else?
The clowns are quite, I don't know, quite active today. They kind of surrounded the police a lot. Can you tell us about that? They did kind of do a lot of spontaneous things.
I mean, after this, there was a bit of a standoff here. I mean, there's like a little ramp here with a wall.
Did they not try to reenact some of the water cannon?
Yeah, I was just going to tell you that clown army, as they do, they build a row of clown army soldiers in front of the police line. And then they reenacted what's been going on at the blockades in the last few days. So they kind of recruited some protester reenactors. And they were blockading and putting their hands up and shouting and chanting. And the clown army got their water cannons and pistols and little watering cans out. And yeah, it was very, very touching to see that again. It was very realistic. We even had some injuries, and the clown army had to give some medical help, which the police at some points did refuse to do, actually. And then I saw that one of the clown army went to try to give some water to the police because they're sweating under their riot gear.
They look pretty hot. I can see them take, they've taken off their white helmets now, but they're kind of like got their full riot gear on, the green, the kind of RoboCop look. And they look very, very hot. It's very warm here today.
Yeah, they're police from, riot police from Saxony. And there's one, he's taking the water bottle right now. He got very aggressive. They had to stand back because there was, I'm not sure whether you remember, there was this rumour that the clown army had acid in their water pistols.
That's ridiculous.
So when this clown army person was going there, the clown with a watering can and sort of sprinkling water in front of their feet, they all stepped back. And then this one policeman, he sort of jumped forwards and hit her hand, trying to hit the water can out of her hand.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah. That's quite pathetic.
Oh yeah, I really like the fact that the clown army had like a press conference, and we're kind of right in the heart of press land really. You can see tons of press, and they all seem to be kind of residing here for the G8 meanwhile. There's lots of hotels and things like that. So it was,
I mean, this is where the official press centre for the G8 summit.
Right.
So this is where they were staying.
Okay.
And that's behind here where also the stage is that we've been talking about. And yeah, the clown army held a press conference to, sort of announce to the world that firstly they'd sort of fully surrounded the evil empire of Sauron and Saruman, who held their eight companions hostage. They fully surrounded them, but out of the goodness of their heart, they were going to let them go. So they just held this press conference to announce that they were going to let them go.
Cool.
Parallel to the G8 summit, an alternative summit was held in Rostock from June the 5th to the 7th, which was not covered yesterday as ongoing events at the blockades hijacked our reporting. The alternative summit illustrates that there are alternatives and involved a range of different takes on current key global issues, such as global justice, environment, climate and energy, war, migration and racism. The summit, which featured scholars from all around the world, opened with Jan Ziegler's speech under the title Rethinking Globalization, which was at the same time the guiding theme. Connecting the different struggles for environment, social and gender justice, reclaiming the climate, introducing the centralized energy supply with renewable resources, analyzing the dynamics blocking the path to peace and learning from examples of non-violent resistance in armed conflicts were some of the issues covered in the different seminars during the last 2 days. Our reporters in Germany described the atmosphere of the G8 Alternative Summit in one of the talks of the opening day.
We arrived towards the end of the talk when the audience discussion was taking place. The discussion was run by three delegates whose job was to mediate and present the questions. As the audience discussion opened, news broke that the blockades were being carried out in the fields around Heiligendamm, with 10,000 people taking part. When this was announced, the panel themselves started to applaud, with the audience raising the volume to a resounding roar. The talk was given by Martin Rochol, director of Friends of the Earth Europe. He commented that the green movement in Germany has not dealt with the issue that people need to change their lifestyles, that they will be inconvenienced. This he discussed through issues such as the use of coal and the use of nuclear power. The German government now wants to build 3 to 5 coal-fired power stations. Nuclear is on the way out. But he talked about the 10 years of blockades of the land where the nuclear power stations were going to be built. He encouraged the people within the church where the meeting was held to blockade the land where the proposed coal-fired power stations will be built in the same way. He encouraged the buying of green electricity, boycotting of products, and blockading as a civilian action in general. Martin Rochol talked a lot about compromises not being enough, and this was seconded by Sunita Narain, director of the Centre for Science and Environment in India. She criticised the idea that new industries in renewable technology create a win-win situation with constant economic growth, which is to say, better for the environment and better for the economy. Sunita described a new situation now, where we see large sections of the global population who are losing in this system. Referring to India, she said the effects are already to be seen, while the global north has not yet come round to the idea that they too will lose in this system in terms of environment and economy. She believes climate change and its effects are the greatest challenge humankind has ever faced. To draw her talk together, she explained how she sees the Earth when looked at from outer space. The Earth is whole. It's one planet. For her, the challenge is for the whole of humankind, and people need to see this challenge as that, a challenge for all human beings here, and not just to be dealt with by one section of society.
Today was the beginning of the Alternative Summit in the Nikolai Church in the center of Rostock, which will last till this Friday. As Peter Wahl from ATTAC put it in his speech at the beginning, he regards this alternative summit, with its over 120 workshops and guests from all over the world, as a part of the whole package of counter-activities and as an important part in the fight for the brains of a new intellectual empire. The critic and UN Special Rapporteur on the Right of Foot, Sean Siegler from Switzerland, a kind of icon of the global movement for another world, held an impressive opening speech mainly about hunger and extreme poverty in the global world system. As he pointed out, this is no question of a lack, as the current global agriculture would be able to provide about 12 milliards of people, nearly the double of the world population now. So there's hardly a lack of goods. The death that comes with hunger and poverty in many parts of the world, said Ziegler, is a death without necessity. For that, children would starve on hunger, are murdered. He titulated this as an ongoing massacre. But in the schedule of the official summit, there's Africa as an important point. But in 5 pages about Africa, there's no topic about hunger, but instead, first and mainly, about securities of invention. From that point of view, there'd be little chance for a change. In Ziegler's speech, he refers to Kant's moral imperative, Karl Marx, Che Guevara, or Willy Brandt to root his appeal on a radical change of the world system that he kept just titulating as wild animal capitalism. The mechanisms of this system, leading to hunger, poverty, and civil wars, started from outside, as Ziegler pointed, wouldn't be a fact of the bad character of single capitalists, but a kind of structural violence. Globalization works, was his ironic response to those who say it doesn't. Since the fall of the Soviet Union at the beginning of the 1990s, the international capital had no more territorial restrictions. The capitalist search for the maximal profit, with neoliberalism as an ideology of legitimation, is functioning pretty well, just it produces more and more mountains of corpse. Though his analytical view on economic and political structures, Ziegler pointed out the social making and foundation of all these structures. All this was made by human beings, he said, and all this can be overthrown radically by the same human beings. He has a quite unknown example for this. The drowning of African countries in cheap products from the European Union, made cheap by high export subventions from the EU and strongly destroying the local African agriculture. When Ziegler said, "This could be stopped tomorrow," he left no doubt that he means that literally. He claimed the complete dissolving of both the World Trade Organization, WTO, and the International Monetary Fund, IWF, without replacement. Ziegler rejected the idea that the opponents of this world order had to have clear alternative programs for these issues. We know what we don't want. This denial, raised by thousands and thousands of people all over the world, would be a starting point of an historical change, like at the beginning of the French Revolution. Referring to Karl Marx's idea that a revolutionary should be able to hear even the grass grow, he sees a growing planetary civil society and movement that started in places now well known. Worldwide. Seattle, Genoa, Porto Alegre, with demonstrations, alternative summits, social forums. The horizon instead would be clear. The basis for all planetary action could be the Charter of the United Nations for Human Rights. This movement hadn't to explain anything to its enemies. We have to beat them. Every historical process is open, but if you ask me, I believe this could be the last summit of a G8 that ever happened in history. And the mighty train of change is in move. If we don't change the world, nobody will do. After Ziegler's speech that ended in standing ovation, Madigouen Cissé from the migrants' movement Sans Papiers in France, now working in Women's Project in Senegal, made a little joke about Ziegler. She said, after receiving a card from the UN from him, "Is he still working there? Next time we will invite him to the blockades." And Thuli Makema from Friends of the Earth in Swaziland, one of the further guests on the podium, rejected clearly any paternalistic view on Africa. "Africa can help itself," she said. "All that's needed to be delivered to Africa is an act of justice, not of charity."
The 2007 G8 summit in Heiligendamm is now over. Friday the 8th of June was the last day of action. Many people have left the camp at Redlich and mainstream blockades have ended. The alternative summit is over too. The Flash Radio reporters are remaining in the area to review the events of this last week. By now, two things are clear. First, that the police operation was completely unable to cope with the massive number of people who expressed their disapproval of the G8 by blockading the gates to the summit. Second, that in many people's minds, the Group of Eight are unconvincing as a means to establish global security, justice and equality.
Flash Radio will continue to podcast every day until the end of the summit, bringing you the voices denied a platform through much of the mainstream media. Stay tuned and keep in touch. Flash Radio, www.flashradio.wordpress.com.